Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Iskan Bibidi founder Charya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa Padavajakacharya, Sotheta Sutta Shishimad of Divine Grace. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Ananta Gaudi Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Sekaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunachananda Shed, Vaita Gidadar, Sri Vasari Govinda Bhaktivinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Gidigobadan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Nabadeep Mayapur Dham ki jai. Ganga Jamunamai ki jai. Tulasi Devi Maharani ki jai. Samaveda Bhakta Brinda ki jai. Harinam Sankirtana ki jai. Brihat Madanga ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru Angadanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 7, Text 8. And I was also asked to do number 9. So, Shri Sukuvacha Saitam Chodita Chatra Saitam Choditas Chatra Tatva Gigya Suno Muni Tatva Gigna Suna Muni Pratyaha Bhagavachita Pratyaha Bhagavachita Smayan Eva Gita Smaya Smayan Eva Gita Smaya Sisukuvacha Sitam Chodita Chatra Tatva Gigya Suna Muni Pratyaha Bhagavach Chitta Smayan Eva Gita Smayaha. Vaishnavis. Shri Sukhuvacha, Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Saha, he, Maitreya Muni, itam, in this way, choditaha, being agitated, chatra, by Vidura, tatvagigyasuna, by one who is anxious to inquire to know the truth. Munihi, the great sage, Pratyaha, replied, Bhagavachitaha, God conscious, Smayan, wondering, Eva, as if, Gatasmayaha, without hesitation. Translation, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Maitreya, being thus agitated by the inquisitive Vidura, at first seemed astonished, but then he replied to him without hesitation, since he was fully God-conscious. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Since the great sage Maitreya was filled with God-consciousness, he had no reason to be astonished at such contradictory questions by Vidura. Therefore, although as a devotee he externally expressed surprise, as if he did not know how to reply to those questions, he immediately became perfectly settled and properly replied to Vidura. Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. Anyone who is a sincere devotee of the Lord knows about the Lord to some extent, and devotional service to the Lord makes him able to know everything by the grace of the Lord. Although a devotee may apparently express himself to be ignorant, he is full of knowledge in every intricate matter. And you want me to go on do number 9. I'll chant this next one myself and read the purport. Maitreya Vacha Seyam Bhagavato Maya Yannayena Virujate Ishvarasya Vimuktasya Karpanyam Utabandhanam. Translation, Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the Personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or Maya. And at the same time, they maintain that he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. So that's Vidura's statement, Prabhupada's translation. Sorry, that's Maitreya's statement, Prabhupada's translation. And once again, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes it appears that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is 100% spiritual, cannot be the cause of the illusory potency which covers the knowledge of the individual soul. But factually, there is no doubt that the illusory external energy is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. When Vyasadeva realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw the Lord along with his external potency, which covers the pure knowledge of the individual living entities. Why the external energy acts in this way may be considered as follows, as analyzed by great commentators like Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami. Although the material illusory energy is distinct from the spiritual energy, it is one of the many energies of the Lord, and thus the material modes of nature, in parentheses, the mode of goodness, etc., are surely qualities of the Lord. The energy and the energetic personality of Godhead are not different. And although such energy is one with the Lord, he is never overpowered by it. Although the living entities are also parts and parcels of the Lord, they are overcome by the material. They are overcome by the material energy. The inconceivable Yogam Aishvaram of the Lord, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 5, is misunderstood by the froggish philosophers. In order to support a theory that Narayan, the Lord himself, becomes a Daridra Narayan, a poor man, they propose that the material energy overcomes the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, however, offer a very nice example in explanation. They say that although the sun is all light, the clouds, darkness, and snowfall are all part and parcel of the sun. Without the sun, there is no possibility of the skies being overcast with clouds or darkness. Nor can there be snowfall on the earth. Although life is sustained by the sun, life is also disturbed by the darkness and snowfall produced by the sun. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. The sun is far, far away from such disturbances. Only those who have a poor fund of knowledge say that the sun is covered by a cloud or by darkness. Similarly, the Supreme Brahman, or the Param Brahman, the personality of Godhead, is always unaffected by the influence of the material energy, although it is one of his energies, Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate. There is no reason to assert that the Supreme Brahman is overpowered by the illusory energy. The clouds, darkness, and snowfall can cover only a very insignificant portion of the sun's rays. Similarly, the modes of material nature may react upon the ray-like living entities. The modes of material nature may react upon the ray-like living entities, period. It is the misfortune of the living entity, certainly not without reason, that the influence of the material energy acts on his pure consciousness and eternal bliss. This covering up of the pure consciousness and eternal bliss is due to avijja karma samgya, the energy which acts on the infinitesimal living entities who misuse their minute independence. So there's the reason. Prabhupada said, certainly not without reason. I mean, that's the reason. They certainly misuse their minute independence. According to the Vishnu Purana, Bhagavad Gita, and all other Vedic literatures, the living entities are generated from the Tathashta energy of the Lord, and thus they are always the energy of the Lord and not the energetic. The living entities are like the sun's rays, although, as explained above, there is no qualitative difference between the sun and its rays. The sun's rays are sometimes overpowered by another energy of the sun, namely the clouds or by the snowfall. Similarly, although the living entities are qualitatively one with the superior energy of the Lord, they have the tendency to be overpowered by the inferior material energy. In the Vedic hymns, it is said that the living entities are like the sparks of a fire. The sparks of fire are also fire, but the burning potency of the sparks is different from that of the original fire. When the sparks fly out, when the sparks fly out of touch with the original fire, they come under the influence of the non-fiery atmosphere. Thus, they maintain the potency to be again one with the fire as sparks. When the sparks fly out of touch with the original fire, they come under the influence of a non-fiery atmosphere. Thus, they maintain the potency to be again one with the fire as sparks, but not as the original fire. The sparks can everlastingly remain within the original fire as its parts and parcels, but the moment the sparks become separated from the original fire, their misfortunes and miseries begin. The clear conclusion is that the Supreme Lord, who is the original fire, is never overpowered by the infinitesimal sparks of the fire. The clear conclusion is that the Supreme Lord, who is the original fire, is never overpowered, but the infinitesimal sparks of the fire can become overpowered by the illusory effect of Maya. It is a most ludicrous argument to say that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by his own material energy. The Lord is the master of the material energy, but the living entities and the conditioned state controlled are, but the living entities are in the conditioned state controlled by the material energy. That is the version of the Bhagavad Gita. The froggish philosophers who put forward the argument that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by the material mode of goodness are themselves illusioned by the same material energy. Although they think of themselves as liberated souls, they support their arguments by a false and laborious jugglery of words, which is a gift of the same illusory energy of the Lord. But the poor froggish philosophers, due to a false sense of knowledge, cannot understand the situation. In the sixth canto, ninth chapter, 34th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Dura vabodha eva tavayam vihara yoga yad asarano sarira idam anavekshitat tasmat samavaya atmanaiva vikriyamanena sagunam aguna shrijasi paschiharasi. Thus the demigods prayed to the Supreme Lord that although his activities are very difficult to understand, they can still be understood to some extent by those who sincerely engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The demigods admitted that although the Lord is apart from the material influence or creation, he nevertheless creates, maintains, and annihilates the complete cosmic manifestation by the agency of the demigods. Omagana timidandisha jananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamyena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bishtam sapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam didapti swaparantikam. So, a lot of points here in these two purports dealing with the first verse first. So, it's making the point here, Sukadeva Goswami is making the point in his translation, and Prabhupada reiterates it in his purport that at first Maitreya seemed astonished, but then he replied without hesitation because he was a fully God-conscious person. And in the purport, Prabhupada elaborates upon that, and he says something very interesting. He reiterates that point, and he elaborates upon it, and he says something very interesting in the last sentence of the purport. He says, although a devotee may apparently express himself to be ignorant, he is full of knowledge in every intricate matter. So I found that this phrase here, a devotee may apparently express himself to be ignorant, that I think was a key point to understanding this. So that means he's not really ignorant. When you're apparently expressing yourself to be ignorant, it's just a way of saying he's not really ignorant, but he's expressing himself like that. So, where does a devotee get that inclination from? Well, where does anybody get anything from? Ultimately, you get it from Krishna. Janmadasya yataha. Krishna is the source of everything. So, whatever qualities we have them because they're there in Krishna. You know, so the devotee gets that quality because it's there in Krishna. Krishna, sometimes, apparently expresses himself to be something other than what he really is, right? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and the Vaikuntha planets, as Narayan, yeah, he's expressing himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna, he's practically always expressing himself as something other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's a reason for that. Well, first of all, to back up a little bit, when Krishna does that, he does it perfectly. Prabhupada gave a lecture here in Los Angeles in 1973 on the teachings of Queen Kunti. I can't remember the verse, but I've heard that lecture many times. I think it was 1823. And he makes a point that when Krishna played the part of the son of Mother Yasoda, he played it perfectly. When Krishna played the part of the friend of the cowherd boys, he played it perfectly. When Krishna played the part of the husband of, the queens of Dwarka, he played that perfectly. So in those, you wouldn't be able to tell that, this is just Krishna playing like this. No, it's like you'd see it and you'd think, wow, he's really like that. Okay? So the devotee does that too. But there's a purpose. There's a purpose when Krishna does that. When Krishna plays a role as the son of Mother Yasoda, or as the lover of the gopis, or as the charioteer of Arjuna, or as the friend of the cowherd boys, he's doing that. There's a purpose behind that. And that purpose, Prabhupada describes nicely in that lecture. I'm just going to read a few sentences here, an excerpt from that lecture. So this is, as I said, a few sentences from that lecture. So it goes, so the friends were also very much obliged to Krishna. Says here, there were so many demons that attacked. Every day, all the boys, they would come back to their home and explain to their mother, "Mother, Krishna is so wonderful. This happened today." And the mothers would say, "Yes, Krishna is wonderful." And Prabhupada goes, "So much, that's all. They do not know Krishna is God. Krishna is the supreme person. They don't know Krishna is God, that he's the supreme person. Krishna is wonderful, that's all. And their love increases." And their love increases. And it goes on. "The more they perceive Krishna's wonderful activities, they become more lover." And this is inverted in quotes. Prabhupada says, "Perhaps he may be a demigod." Yes. That is their suggestion. When Nanda Maharaj will talk amongst his friends, and the friends will talk about Krishna, "Oh, Nanda Maharaj, your child Krishna is wonderful." And so Nanda Maharaj's reply is, "Yes, I see that. Maybe some demigod." So then Prabhupada's comment is, "That's all. Maybe. That is also not certain." Okay. So, and here's the conclusion, Prabhupada's conclusion. He says, "So the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they do not care who is God or who is not God. That is not their business. They want Krishna and love Krishna. That's all." See? So that's why Krishna does that. That's why Krishna plays a role. He plays a role to facilitate the increase of these loving exchanges. And he plays it perfectly. Just like I said, when he plays the cowherd boy, he's a cowherd boy. And the other cowherd boys, as far as they're concerned, he's our buddy. He's not the supreme personality of God. He's just Krishna, our friend, you know. And they wrestle, and sometimes Krishna loses, and he has to carry him on his shoulders, and all sorts of things like that. So, you know, there's so many, many different examples. But this is the reason why he's doing it, to increase the loving relationships among these very highly elevated confidential devotees. There's that verse about how these cowherd boys perform many, many pious activities like that to be in the position of doing that. So anyway, getting back to the purpose, you say, okay, well, why? What's going on here? You know, why is Vidura or Maitreya? Why is Maitreya apparently expressing himself to be ignorant? Same idea, same principle. What's really going on in this first verse here is, or in this conversation, is they're churning the nectar. That's my understanding. Maitreya and Vidura are churning the nectar. Vidura doesn't need to ask these questions. He's an elevated Mahabhagavad. We already heard Vidura preach back in the first canto when he was preaching to Dhritarashtra. Whatever he's asking Maitreya, he already knows the answers to. And whatever Maitreya is answering, he knows Vidura. They're churning the nectar. They're churning the nectar for the purpose of machchita matgita prana bodhayantas parashparam katayantas chamam nicham tushanti charamanticha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered unto me. They derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. So they enjoy it. The devotees do this because, you know, they like to, they want to glorify Krishna. They're pleasing Krishna. That's the point. The devotees derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlightening one another and conversing about Krishna, is because it's pleasing to Krishna. Krishna's pleased when the devotees do that. So the devotees are happy to do that, and they feel that, you know, satisfaction and bliss. See? So that's what's going on here. They're churning the nectar. Okay, so now in this next, and that's one separate package here, okay? Now the next verse translates, talking about something entirely different. It's talking about, because Maitreya is starting to answer this inquiry by Vidura about, you know, I'm bewildered by this material energy. How is it possible that, you know, that this material energy is acting so adversely upon the conditioned souls. How could it be something that's coming from Krishna? So Maitreya's initial response is he's going to clear up a bunch of different misconceptions here. But the first one he's addressing is that this idea of that the Supreme Lord can be influenced by his own energy. And a lot of different points are made in the purport, and I'm not going to have time. Nor do I think I have the ability to go over each one of them in point by point. But I think the gist of that entire purport is like this. Before I became a devotee, I had many jobs. Not many. Maybe like a half a dozen or a dozen, probably. And most of them I got fired, to be honest with you. I never lasted very long at any job. But I worked in a couple factories. And what I learned when I worked in a factory is that there's rules and regulations for the workers. It's not like you just go in there and kind of do your best. You have to do that. But there's rules and regulations. In other words, you clock in at a certain time, and you got to punch in at that time. And then you work for an hour or so, and then there's a coffee break. And in one place I worked in, there's like some sort of beeper goes off or something. There's some sound and then everybody knows, okay, it's coffee break. 10:15 to 10:30, you get your coffee break. So all the workers, everybody goes into the room, and then the thing goes to 10:30 again, and everybody's, whatever they're doing, they just stop what they're doing and back to work, okay? And another thing was, so you don't sit around the coffee room. You don't show up early, and you don't go out afterwards. You have to only go there after that buzzer buzzes, and you have to get out of there when that buzzer buzzes the second time. Otherwise, you're going to lose your job, basically. And another thing I learned was that even if you finish the job you're assigned, you always got to keep looking busy. Don't stand around doing nothing. If anything, just break down some boxes or whatever. Just do something. Look like you're working, in other words. That's for the workers. The workers are they're under that regulations. But now, say the CEO of the whole company comes down into the factory. He might be dressed like everybody else, but he can go sit down in that coffee room anytime he wants. He can go into the coffee room and sit down there at 9:45. He doesn't have to wait for the buzzer. And he could sit there after the buzzer goes. And he could be walking around that factory with his hands in his pockets, just chatting around. And he's not subjected to those rules and regulations of the workers. He's completely independent of that. So in the same way, that's Krishna's situation. Krishna's situation is he's not under the control of his energy. It's like it's his company. So he makes the rules and regulations. He doesn't have to follow them. He can make them, but he doesn't have to follow them. Whereas all the other workers, they have to follow the rules and regulations. So that's Krishna's situation here. Now, here in the purport, Prabhupada is giving a modern-day example, because because this was spoken 5,000 years ago, but a modern-day example of this misconception that the Lord is subjected, comes under the control of his energy, is this idea of Jarudra Narayan. Because that's modern day, right, Arjuna? That's recent. That's not something that goes back thousands of years. But their idea is they're saying that, Narayan has become poor. He's become a Dharidra. So, and that's an example of how Krishna is becoming influenced by his energy. But it's a bogus idea that Narayan is becoming poor, influenced by his energy. It's just a way. Basically, what they're trying to do is they're trying to squirm out of surrendering. This is an attempt to squirm out of surrendering. Because if they could portray Narayan, the Supreme Lord, as being influenced by his energy, well, then he's not the supreme. It's kind of like, well, he is the supreme controller. But anyway, they don't have to surrender. You don't have to surrender to a supreme controller that's being controlled by his energy. So and the Prabhupada says in the purport, he says something very interesting. He says, the froggish philosophers who put forward the argument that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by the material mode of goodness are themselves illusioned by the same material energy, and not the mode of goodness, by the way. That's my adding that. Buddhists, although they think themselves as they think of themselves as liberated souls, and here's the interesting sentence I thought, they support their arguments by a false and laborious jugglery of words, which is a gift of the same illusory energy of the Lord. So they don't want to surrender. They want to squirm out of it. And Krishna gives them the intelligence how to do it. He gives them the brains, how to come up with all these, as it says, a false and laborious jugglery of words. It's a gift of the illusory energy because they don't want to surrender. And Krishna, yayatamam papajante, tamstataiva bhajami. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. And if they don't want to surrender to me, I'll give them that facility too. So that's what's, I think, the way it's going on here. So anyway, the point is this, I think. The take-home lesson from this is that you get what you pay for. In other words, if you want to do that, if you want to squirm out of surrendering to Krishna, you will be able to do it. You will be able to do it because Maya will supply you the intelligence how to do it. You see? But if you want to surrender, and this example of Dharija Narayan is an example of that. When people are saying that, Supreme Lord is conditioned by his energy, it's an example of that. But if you want to surrender to Krishna, Krishna will give the intelligence how to do that. And this is it's obvious, but it's an important point to meditate on because here's an example, okay? You go to the airport or do you go to like a big train station. It's not like everybody at that airport or everybody at that train station is going to the same place. We'll wind up in the same destination. Somebody might think, oh, look, all these people, they're here and they're all going to this, they're all going to the same destination. No. They're going to go to the place where they bought the ticket to get to. You see? So just like here, there's so many in this community, okay? I hope I'm not going to get in trouble. There's a lot of people in the community. So if somebody could come and think, oh, well, all these people are going back to Godhead. No, not necessarily. You get what you pay for. In other words, if you invest in, engaging, if you're buying the ticket back to Godhead, which is, purchased by chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, attending the program, engaging in devotional service, if you buy the ticket for going back to Godhead, yeah, then you're going back to Godhead. But if you just happen to be here on the train station, so to speak, and you're not buying the ticket, or you're buying a ticket to go someplace else, then you're going to go someplace else. And that's, we got to remind ourselves of that. That one of the most fundamental points of Krishna consciousness is that there is life after death. This is it. This isn't the all in all. There's consequences. What we do in this life bears consequences in our next life. So we have to remind ourselves that if we want to a particular result, then we have to make particular preparations. And it's not like you can't squirm out of that. You see, because as I said, this is an example of that. These Dharija Narayan or froggish philosophers, as Prabhupada refers to them too, they'll squirm out of surrendering to Krishna, and they'll get the result of squirming out of surrendering to Krishna, which is they will continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So we don't want to follow in the footsteps of the froggish philosophers and continue in the cycle. What's that verse in the third? Shraddhana, Pudusha, Dharmashasha, Parantapa, Apropyamam, Navartante, Mrityu, Samsadavartmini. That those who don't have faith, what they just achieve repeated birth and death in this material world. So we don't want to be following the footsteps of the froggish philosophers. We want to follow in the footsteps of like Maitreya and Vidura, who are, sincere, surrendered devotees of the Lord, churn the nectar, go back to Godhead, and not like the froggish philosophers, try to squirm out of surrendering and stay here in the material world in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? Ananda Kirtan Prabhu. I know he's going to count.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the conception that Dharija Narayan means it's a misconception by the Mayavad philosophers that I'm Narayan, you're Narayan, everyone's Narayan, and to attain salvation you have to serve others, so you serve other people who are Narayan, and you even serve the beggars on the street who are considered Dharija Narayan. They're poor Narayans, but they're also Narayan.
Yeah, that's you kind of, but in the purport here, Prabhupada's explaining this. Look here, let me read the sentence again. The froggish philosophy, in order to support a theory that Narayan, the Lord himself, becomes a Dirija Narayan, a poor man, they propose that the material energy overcomes the Supreme Lord. So that's at the root of the whole thing, that the Supreme Lord has become overcome by his, for that purpose, the material energy overcomes the Supreme Lord. So that's at the root of that philosophy. Yeah. You wanted to say something about this point or another question altogether? Oh. On this point. Archduke, you want to?
Yes, they do say that everybody's Narayan, but this, your point about the ritual is actually correct. They use that specifically to stop people from worshiping Narayan. You see? Because in India, people are naturally inclined to go to temples and worship Narayan, Vishnu, Krishna.
Yeah, thank you.
So they came up with this Dirija Narayan thing to stop that. Why are you going to the temple to worship Narayan? Don't you see there's so many Narayans loitering in the street? Dirija Narayan. You go and serve that Dirija Narayan. It's the same as worshiping the so-called. That's the point. And Prabhupada hammered them on that, that it's inconsistent. You say, go and feed the Dirija Narayan. And what do you want to feed him? Goat Narayan, you see? Kill goat Narayan to feed poor Narayan loitering in the street. So their arguments are completely inconsistent, which is obvious, because there is Narayan separate from the parts and parcels. That's what this whole purport was all about. Narayan is the sun, the parts and parcels are like the rays, and they can be covered, but Narayan can't be covered. So they overlook that. They're saying, yes, we're all Narayan. You don't have to go and worship Narayan. Go and serve the original Narayan, poor Narayan in the street. Give him goat Narayan to eat, and you'll be just as good as going to the temple, which is not a fact.
Right. Thank you. That was a great clarification. Thanks. I really appreciate that. Yeah, and that's why Maitreya is saying it's against all logic. It doesn't make any sense. That was really beautiful. Mother Kriya Shakti.
The word froggish philosophers has come up quite a bit in the in your lecture and the purports. Maybe you could explain that?
Froggish
philosophers?
Well, Prabhupada explains it in the purport. Let's see if I can use Prabhupada's words. They put forward an argument that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by the material mode of goodness. They are themselves illusioned by the same material energy. That's Prabhupada's kind of definition of a froggish philosopher, somebody who's doing that. And they don't realize that the very arguments that they're supplying are a gift of the same illusory energy of the Lord. So that's.
He also says that their croaking is like the croaking of the frogs that just invite the snake of death to come
elsewhere,
and get them.
Right. Yeah, elsewhere.
And
in the
also Prabhupada gives that example of the frog in the well, that the frogs are in the well and they're thinking that this is all that's here, this is just the well, and they're croaking and croaking and they puff themselves up and, you know, is it
okay,
this
right.
big?
Oh,
is
so
the
you're referring to the
big,
other places.
This big, and then
this is not the only place where Prabhupada used that expression, frog as philosophers. As Mother Kriya Shakti pointed out, it appears elsewhere in the second canto in a couple different places, and maybe there's even more references, I don't know. Any other question? Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.